Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. While 1,000 light years may seem like a vast distance away from Earth, in the scale of our universe, it's practically in our backyard. And it's just 1,000 light years away, where astronomers in Chile have found potentially the closest black hole to the Earth. The stellar black hole was discovered by the way it interacts with two stars nearby, and it's unique in that it can be potentially seen with the naked eye, if you live in the Southern Hemisphere, that is. Our astronomy contributor Gene Creighton notes that the previous black hole thought to be closest to Earth was 3 times farther away, making this discovery a significant find in how we understand the making of black holes. She joins me now to discuss what astronomers know about black holes so far and how the coronavirus has impacted astronomical research. She starts by explaining how the black hole discovery in the Chile Observatory was made.
So how we figured out that this black hole exists is because we watched a star move around what seemed to be empty space, and eventually people could really follow the orbit closely and use, you know, basically Newtonian physics to say what mass would be required to make that star do that. And when they calculated, because it's also a matter of how fast it's going around it, given how fast that star was moving around this unseen companion, they calculated that the mass was so high it had to be a black hole, given the volume that it had to be in. So that's cool. As you say, 1,000 light years feels a long way, but the nearest one was 3 times farther than that. So to give you some kind of sense, we are able to see bright stars at 1,000 light years. So that would be something like Rigel and Orion or Betelgeuse would be that kind of distance. And those stars are super bright. Now, admittedly, they are super luminous, super giants. Most stars at that distance would not be as bright as all that. Every time we find more black holes, we fill out a spectrum of masses. Now, this is what we call a stellar black hole, as opposed to a galactic black hole, what we would find in the center of our galaxy, a supermassive black hole. And we used to think that it's stellar and supermassive galactic black holes, and there really wasn't a whole lot in between. This is definitely a stellar one, but the more data we collect, the better our statistics are to analyze what is the distribution of black holes, not to mention how they might form. So every time you find a black hole is a victory, and the fact that it's close enough that you can see the accompanying star together is definitely unique. In most cases, you haven't any chance of doing that.
From what I understand of the basics, usually a black hole interacts a bit violently with its environment. And this one they just discovered has, you know, kind of 2 stars rotating around it. So just to remind us, can you explain the basics of what a black hole is and how they coexist with all of these other components of the universe?
Sure. So a black hole is an object that has what we call a escape velocity equal to the speed of light, which means that the speed you have to give it for it to leave, for any object to leave the black hole and never come back, is the speed of light. And that means that even light cannot escape a black hole. So that is fairly abstract, what I just described. What we call the event horizon for the black hole, which is kind of what defines its border, if you will, is the moment where that happens, where the escape velocity becomes equal to the speed of light. And it's useful to kind of think about this a little bit, why escape velocity has anything to do with it. Escape velocity depends on how much mass you're trying to escape from and how far you are from the center of that body. So the concept of a black hole is old. It's from the 15th century. A monk was thinking, Mitchell, his name is, was thinking, if you're telling me that the escape velocity depends on the mass I'm trying to escape from and the distance I have from the center, that means that if I take the same amount of mass and squeeze it to a really small volume, that thereby reducing the distance to the center, that means eventually I could make something that's so incredibly dense that it would in fact have an escape velocity of the speed of light. And it took centuries from us to go from a theoretical concept to an actual observation of black holes. But it's one of those beauties of the human mind, right? We can envision things long before we can see them, long before we can measure them. And now we've seen black holes in a variety of different ways.
And this recent discovery, as you mentioned, can be seen in the Southern Hemisphere. And the impact of COVID-19 around the world, of course, is different compared to what we are specifically experiencing in the U.S. But I'm curious how COVID-19 has impacted the work of astronomers. Can you work remotely when many times I think of these massive telescopes that are used and machines, and not a lot of people can do that kind of work from home per se. So what do you know of how work is being impacted currently?
Actually, the distinction would not be mostly for large telescopes, because now most large telescopes are operated remotely, or at the very least, you as the observer do not go to the site, because people have understood that the cost is in some cases prohibitive to have all these hundreds of people show up at telescopes night after night. So they probably have, well, they do have, even now, I'm sure, you know, skeleton crews who operate the telescope, and the positions have been already determined exactly what filters you're going to use, all the parameters that you would need to make those observations. And the person who really knows what they're doing with this telescope is the person who collects the data. So those are not the astronomers who are probably suffering the most. So it wouldn't be observers, because they can get their data, and every observer on the planet has data that's sitting on a computer somewhere that they think, okay, this is it. This is it. I have to analyze this data right now. So they have, you know, side projects. The people who rely heavily on computers, and many people do, or require fancy simulations, again, supercomputers, most of those jobs can be done remotely as well. The people who probably are suffering are the people who their job is to design an instrument that requires a lab. I suspect that those people are the ones who are, you know, really suffering. I was reading about a project in Italy that this is an experiment to measure the nature of dark matter. That is the stuff that makes itself felt, kind of like a black hole. We can see things respond to it, but all this dark matter, and it's a lot, it's like 80% of the mass of our galaxy, is unseen, does not make light to us. So this is a really embarrassing and important question right now in modern astronomy. And the instrument was launched in Italy, which, of course, as you know, as COVID has really impacted them greatly. And they went through all this rigmarole to try at very least get the instrument and the facility at a place where they could stop it. But they basically had to call in people, even when there was, you know, in the process of shutting down the country, to just get everything situated so that a huge investment wasn't just gonna, you know, there's certain things that you really have to do in a lab. You can't just say, oh, I've got 5 tons of xenon. Oh, well, I guess I'm going on vacation. You really have to make sure that everything is situated. I'm thrilled to tell you that despite COVID, it seems like all the work that's been going on with the Perseverance rover that's going to Mars in July, I'm sure we'll talk about that later in the year, seems to be going on, seems to be under, they're still on target. So that's thrilling that hasn't slowed them down, because I was worried about how they would respond to something like this. Then, of course, you remember that all these teams work in clean rooms already. So they probably have, you know, big time protocols that they probably can add a little thing to make sure that they're not working too close to each other.
And how about yourself? Obviously, we're both doing this from our homes. How is your work in astronomy at UWM being impacted, and how have you adapted?
Well, as you know, I do a lot of live programming to the public and to schools. So it's been very strange for me for mid-May to come in and not to have 12 programs a week, which is sort of typical for me this time of year, which means that in some ways I have reserves to do things like projects that I simply haven't been able to do. But it also makes me think, okay, planning with this uncertainty, when are we going to be able to have real, you know, live programs again in the planetarium? What else can we do that would be interesting and good? So I've already started a program that's live for families with kids, and that's been really fun, called Stars Have Stories, and that continues until the end of June. We're all thinking, of course, we've been thinking for some time, and we're well in production now for a program called Moving to Mars for July around Perseverance departure. And we're thinking of a couple of other things. I, for example, realized that no matter what the situation is in August, we're all going to be running to the hills and possibly taking in the Perseid shower that happens in mid-August. And I thought, well, maybe I should make sure that we have a program that helps people understand what they need to know about shooting stars and meteor showers so that they can enjoy it even more so. These are the sorts of things. And what's the cadence to have programming under these circumstances? Are we all going to be zoomed out and maybe not being interested in online programming, and how to make it relevant? And I'll just say one more thing, and that is I also have had some data that I haven't had a chance to get to. So this will be my opportunity to be able to do some of my own work. And that's exciting.
Yeah, it's definitely good to see discoveries both locally and internationally are still continuing, and that, of course, we can continue to have these conversations together. So, Jean, thanks very much for joining me, and until next month.
Thank you so much, Audrey. This was fun.
Jean Creighton is our astronomy contributor and the director of UW-Milwaukee's Manfred Olson Planetarium. You can find all of our past segments with her at wuwm.com.